Welcome to Coaching Conversations, a weekly discussion of topics related to coaching and sport of volleyball at all levels. I'm your host, John Foreman, author of the CoachingVB.com blog and co-developer of the Volleyball Coaching Wizards Project. Let's dive right in. Hi there. Welcome to episode 11 of the podcast. I'm recording this on December 20th, 2020. It's the day after the AVCA's virtual convention. And I decided for this one that I was just going to do my guest. The guest will be me, I suppose. Or maybe put it another way, the conversation in this recording is between myself and you, albeit extremely lopsided, because you may be talking to me back through your through whatever medium you're listening to this on, but unless you send me a message of some kind, I'm not going to hear it anyway. But hopefully you'll still enjoy it. There's been a lot going on, so I figured it wouldn't be a bad idea to just do kind of what you could call a personal update from my perspective. It's also, given everything that's been going on, it's also been a difficult time to try to arrange to have somebody come on for a conversation. Although that has also generated a lot of possibilities for future conversations. And I'll get into that in a little bit. But let me start off with the AVCA since it just finished. Although to say it's done is definitely not really true. It's a long way from finished for anybody who attended, because there's just so much content. In a normal convention, there's always going to be different competing sessions that are going on. You have to pick and choose, and there's no way around that. I was kind of talking on the live stream that I did last night that if you go as a staff or if you go as friends or whatever, you could kind of say, okay, I'll go to this one and you go to that one, and hey, you can go to that one and we'll all get together later and we'll share notes and that sort of thing. And if you were lucky, the AVCA got the sessions that you missed recorded, and about a month later you could, you know, go get them on the AVCA website if you remember. In this instance though, you don't have that aspect of it because, you know, you're kind of doing it yourself. I mean, yeah, for sure. You, as a staff, if everybody's in, you could say, let's split it up and all that. But there's nothing to keep you from watching all of them. And being the educational geek that I am, I want to watch the vast majority of the ones that got posted. It was a decision during every single session time slot between multiple seminars that I wanted to watch. And there was usually like six or seven actual sessions plus maybe two or three of what they called learning labs. And I'll talk to that in a minute. So, you know, it's always choices, prioritization. What do I want to do now? What should I save for later? And I learned a lesson really early on. It was literally the first session of day two. Day one, it was Wednesday. It was the normal kind of pre-convention day, which is not heavily full of content. It's usually some longer pre-convention type sessions that are going on. And in this case, you kind of chose between doing Lucas Labe's more coaching side of things or doing the A stuff, which is more career oriented. And I personally opted for the latter because there was one that there was a follow-up conversation that was done over Zoom that I wanted to be involved in. So I put Luca aside, and that was okay, because that was a lot of auditory sort of stuff. But when I had Jamie Morrison's presentation first thing on Thursday, which was heavy visual, I knew I was going to have to go back over it again, because I was working in a situation where I had visual distractions. I might have to answer an email or a text or do something on social media or whatever, because it was still nominally a working day for me. And that was even more the case on Friday when I was in the office, because right now, yesterday, well, not yesterday, Friday the 18th was actually the last day in the office for us on campus at Medi. So I just said after Jamie's thing, I was like, all right, because I know I'm going to have all these distractions, I'm going to have to do a bit of pick and choose here and focus on the stuff that is more auditory, so I can listen to them without having to always be watching the screen. Not that I couldn't, do a look over or something along those lines, but I was going to be able to absorb the content better that way. So basically what I'm left with after the CBCA is all the really visual sessions, all the sessions that would be more court oriented, or perhaps would be presentations with a bunch of video built into. Like I know Jamie has done before. Last year he did one at the ABCA that was about serving, and he used a lot of video clips on that as well. By the way, if you ever get a chance to see Jamie present on anything, he does a really good job. He's one of the best at integrating the video and the text and his commentary and all that. So no matter the topic, I think he's good to listen to. Whether you agree or disagree with what he actually says, that's completely irrelevant. But yeah, so I think when I originally laid out kind of the plan and went through and was looking at, hey, that one's interesting or that one's interesting, I tagged something like 75 or 78 sessions, which is, I mean, just on the face of it, that's a lot. But when you consider how few you can actually get to in a given day, it's an enormous number. Because I think there were maybe five to six streams or time slots each day of educational content. More, and those are concentrated on Thursday, Friday. Saturday was a bit of a shorter day, and obviously I said Wednesday was a shorter day because that was kind of the pre-convention stuff. And in between, you had some stuff. You had like the event, the awards ceremonies that would normally take place, like over lunches and whatnot, were all recorded, obviously, so they were tighter affairs. No All-American awards this year, of course, because we haven't really had the season for most teams yet. So that stuff will all have to happen in the spring. But those were kind of inserted basically in the noons, right around the noon slot Eastern time, each day that they ran them, which was, yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they put them in there. So as I was saying, you're talking between four and six time slots of educational content, and interspersed in there is these learning labs, which also fill additional time slots. And the learning lab was basically, you had to sign up for these in advance, and I think they were limited to 25 people because they were done by Zoom, whereas the convention itself was all presented through a website, through a platform. So when and if you're able to sign up for these learning labs based on when you could register and first come, first serve and all that. So I ended up signing up for two of them that took place on Saturday, one with Giovanni Gaddetti, following up his session on non-scored practice activities. I'll talk to that a little bit later, possibly. The other one was with Peter Vint. Following up on his conversation or his presentation about kind of diving into talent identification and recruiting. So, as a result, on Saturday, I only did three or four actual educational sessions because of those things and because it was a shorter day. Friday was definitely intense. Saturday was pretty intense. I was wiped out by 3 o'clock, 3:30 on Saturday, and I still had a couple of things to do from that point. And there were also the general meetings to attend, which were kind of in that midday time slot as well. And those We're scheduled for like 75 minutes, though some of them definitely ran longer than that. So I was in one for the Division III coaches. I was on f Thursday, and then there was a men's coaches one on Friday. And I actually had to leave that one before it was done because they ran longer than 75 minutes, and I had to get on to something else. And those are the first times I'd ever sat in on those general meetings. I think usually because I was, if you go to a normal convention, they were overlapping with other things that I might have wanted to do. But in this case, obviously, knowing that I could go back and watch recordings, it wasn't such a worry about conflict. And I'm going to have to go back and finish up the men's session, so we'll see. As I record this now, I'll do that because there were still like four, I think it was four agenda items that hadn't been addressed yet when I had to sign off. Which would be interesting. In any case, so I probably did 15 or so actual sessions that I could attend while they were being recorded, maybe not while they were being presented initially, quote unquote, live. And maybe not even that many, because there were a couple that I missed the day before that I went back and watched before things got started the next day, because they didn't get going until 11 a.m. Aside from Wednesday when they started at 1 Eastern, the rest of the days everything started at 11, which was convenient. Maybe not as convenient for people on the West Coast of the U.S. where it was 8 o'clock, but still worked for me all right. And there was definitely some interesting stuff, for sure. And there's going to be blog posts on it because that's what I do. I've already. And you might have already seen the log entries that I posted. And what I'm kind of figuring I might end up doing is creating like additional log entries for the days where I watch more of the recordings. And I'll also do posts kind of addressing some of the stuff that I might hear or see in a particular session if I think it's interesting. For example, one that I know is going to come up. And by the time you hear this, it might already be out there on the blog, is John Cook's discussion of moving the women's volleyball season from fall, where it currently is, to spring, and his arguments in favor of doing that. Which were there were some of them were ones that I hadn't either heard or thought of before. Others were ones that have certainly come up, and there are definitely counter arguments to be made. I don't know how much traction John's going to get on this. It's an interesting discussion to have for sure. I won't deny that. So you'll see that stuff in that blog post. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get through it all. Honestly, Ruth Nelson and I were kind of joking that, maybe AVCA needs to give people like another extra 2 weeks to allow them to get through Christmas. Because the platform is only available for a total of 30 days, and then all that stuff's gone. And I don't know what the AVCA is planning on doing with the content after that. Like, are they gonna make it available in the member section somehow or some way, or package it in some other fashion? Nothing. We haven't heard anything on that. And to be honest, part of me says, from a business perspective, might not be a bad idea for the AVCA to say, nope, that's it. If you didn't attend, then it's gone. There's no recourse to get it afterwards through the normal means. Because then it kind of creates a scarcity. But we'll see. For sure, it's going to make for some really interesting decisions moving forward. Because Kathy actually joked along the way that the on-court sessions are, people are going to have to up their games moving forward. The convention is going to have to up their games moving forward. Because normally at a convention, due to NCAA restrictions on the recruiting side of things, coaches who are doing them you can't use your own players, you can't use high school players. So oftentimes you'll end up using like middle school age kids, and or like men's professional players who might be, hanging around. What basically whatever is on hand and doesn't violate the NCAA rules. And so that is far, far away from being the most efficient way to do things, and it creates a lot of challenges. Whereas if in the situations that we had in this virtual convention, coaches recorded stuff, either fresh using their own teams. Like I watched the thing from Mike Linganfelter from Muncie, where he was doing a kind of a live recording of a practice session. And he just had his group demo this exercise and then that exercise and then and, in a whole sequence of different games and drills and stuff. And all he had to do was tell them drill Z. And of course, they all know because they've been doing it what that means. So they go right to where they need to be and get things going. Whereas other coaches, for example, Giovanni Gaudette, when he was doing his presentation on the non-scoring stuff, he used practice clips that he grabbed to of all the stuff he wanted to talk about and put it together in about a 45-minute, presentation. That stuff is hard to replicate. That the efficiency of being able to show things so neatly is hard to do in a live environment like we normally have at the AVCA. So that's going to make things quite interesting. I don't know how much it necessarily changes the more classroom-oriented stuff. We'll see. Maybe there's a little bit more use of recordings and technology. Could be. I know I didn't present this year. I presented last year, and for me, one of the challenges of presenting at the live event is thinking in terms of, well, how many questions might people have? Should I take questions while I'm presenting, or hold it all to the end? And okay, and therefore, how long do I actually have to be able to talk to fill the time? How many questions do I have to account for to know when I probably should stop to allow people to get those in? So there's a bunch of variables in there. And what happened with this convention is, they recorded basically about a 45-minute presentation, and the presenters were in the chat associated with that particular session, so people could throw questions at them while the thing was going on. Now, this is all textual, so it's there are challenges in that regard because as a presenter, depending on how many questions come in and how much help you might have answering them, you got to type pretty fast to respond, and you could be responding to something that was happening, 5 minutes ago in the presentation itself. And so it's not perfect, obviously. And that's why having the learning labs was a good tag on to that sort of stuff. They weren't available for all the sessions, which is totally fine because some of them you really didn't need that sort of thing. They weren't the sort of thing that demanded a lot of questions or, presented the audience a situation where they might want to think about things from a different angle than maybe the presenter did to bring up different points. So the learning labs did serve that purpose quite well in the more intensive question, likely question intensive sessions. So I think that it was good to add those in. But having them did mean that you generally were going to miss out on attending another presentation in that time slot, which again is why it kind of cut down on the total number that you could get in on any given day. So I think that kind of covers the basic, takeaways. Actually, the one thing I would throw in at the end is there was a lot of people who, when you ask them, are you going to attend the convention? Oh, it's too expensive. Because the bottom end price was $249. It was a little higher if you weren't a member or, based on different or when you did it. But there were so many coupon codes available out there that you could get it at $249 if you really wanted to. I think anybody who thought the too expensive thing, you got it way wrong, way wrong. Just going through the 4 days that I went through, it was you could make a good case that there was plenty of value to be had for the 249. But given that I'm going to watch hours and hours of more of these recordings before I'm finished with it, it's good quality stuff. It's not slapped together sort of stuff. Generally, the presentations I saw were done, and this is usually the case at the ABC anyway. They were done pretty well. You can always make the arguments about the content of the sessions, and some are always going to be stronger than others, and some are always going to be more interesting to you than others are, and hopefully, flip that around for other people's cases. But the actual work that was done by these presenters to create good presentations, at least so far as the ones that I saw, was all solid. I'm thinking about, well, what would you normally get for a 249 thing? Like a weekend clinic, maybe something like an Art of Coaching or a Gold Medal Squared or Volleyball Master Coaches or any number of clinics that are out there that are 2 or 3 day events. And they're good events. And yes, the live experience is has a value of its own. But for the sheer volume of content, they can't get close to what got presented in this virtual convention. They don't have the bandwidth to be able to do it. Because normally you're talking kind of a one track sort of thing. So it's this thing and then that thing and then the next thing. So maybe you've got 15 sessions over the course of a clinic. And you can't rewind and go back and review and watch it again. I mean, you could obviously take notes and notes and notes, which we all do. And I definitely took a lot of notes during my sessions. And I'm sure I'll be taking tons more than the ones that I haven't watched yet. But definitely think again if this opportunity comes around, because it's worth way more than the 249. So, all right, enough about the ABCA. Unless you guys have questions, feel free to shoot them into me. I have, no problems answering. Future content. As I said, I'm sure there's going to be blog posts coming in from what I've seen and read and whatever and listened to in these convention presentations. Hopefully I'll have some of the presenters on to talk about what they discussed and maybe their experience doing it at the convention. I'll be working on that in the days and weeks ahead. Because I think there were some that were definitely attention grabbing and interesting. One for sure that I can almost guarantee that I'll have on is Beth Lanier. She and her book co-author did a presentation based on their book at the convention. I haven't seen it yet. I think I'm going to watch it after I finish reading the book, which Beth was kind enough to send me. We had Beth on one of the more recent versions, basically, yeah, I think. The third to last edition of Weekly Buzz, right around Thanksgiving or slightly after Thanksgiving. So she talked about it then. I'm going to read through the book myself, and then probably watch the presentation. And in between, I'll after I get done with the book, I'll see if I can organize a time for Beth to come on and do a conversation about it, and maybe her co-author, I think it's Leo as well. One or both of them to come on and do that. And I want to get the book read relatively quickly so we can maybe arrange something before she has to get involved with preparing, once school session comes back on and everybody's jumping into to having their season again. Shorter term, I've got something already scheduled with Jeff Carlston, who's the former Ohio State head coach, was there for about 10 years and coached a couple of stops in Division I. He's now doing some work in Colorado. Jeff authored an article for Volleyball Mag that came out a few weeks ago called Coaching with Grace that I thought was an interesting piece. So I want to sit down with him and explore that concept a bit more. So that'll be coming up ahead. And beyond that, just whenever the idea strikes me, I'll probably do some more stuff with my staff as we kind of talk about things coming up with Madai and maybe tie them in with some of the ABCA stuff and things that they want to learn. It's one of the things that I do want to do with them is, expose them to more things to help their further their education and their development. So keep an eye on all that sort of stuff. And we're coming up on the end of 2020, which has for sure been quite an interesting year. But interestingly, from the traffic indications that I've got through the website, it looks like gonna have pretty close to the same number of page views this year as we had last year. I don't know if it's quite got there yet, but page views is gonna cross a quarter of a million for sure, which is where it's been at these last couple of years. So it's nice to see that we haven't completely lost the audience, even though things did dry up quite a bit in the latter part of the spring when shutdowns went into effect. And I'll post an update on that, all that stuff for New Year's Day as I always do. Okay, I think that's about it in terms of the content side of things. In terms of what's going on at Madai, we just, as I mentioned earlier, we just finished up the semester. On the plus side, had some pretty good academic results. The grades are already in and posted, so I got to see everybody's term GPAs. The guys came in just a little bit under 3.0 average for the team, which is, it's a little disappointing because I'd like to see him above that, but it's not terrible. Nobody lost eligibility or anything like that, so that's always the first consideration. So that'll hopefully be improved next semester. We've already told them, hey, gotta push, especially given how the women ended up with a 3.5, which is dead on the dean's list requirement for Madai. And it turns out, I think six of the eight players got Dean's List, finished with a 3.5 or better, which is pretty awesome. I'm super excited because, to the best of my recollection, I haven't had a team get the ABCA Academic Award yet. Maybe one year when I was coaching at Dean College way, way, way back in the day. But I don't remember getting one at Brown. I think we came close a few times, but couldn't quite pull it off. Same thing at MSU. I don't remember about URI when I was there. But hey, if the ladies keep it up with even something close to what they did this term, we'll be a lock for it. Now, of course, the big question is if we can actually have a season. So I don't know what the ABCA is going to do with teams that maybe they won't play this year. Hopefully they'll still have the award. Because otherwise, that would be really disappointing from my perspective anyway. But speaking to the season, this remains, let's just be honest, we're in Division III. We know we have no NCAA championship this year, just like Division II. ABCA is looking to run an invitational sort of championship in April. That was one of the things that got discussed at convention and was announced even before that. So we'll see if that comes off. But the news out of the conference most recently is, I think, the best we could end up doing on the women's side is having something like six matches that take place in close, with teams in the Buffalo area. There's one of our conference rivals is only, maybe 25 miles away from us, so they would be a natural choice to play. There are other D1 schools that are not that far away from us. One nearby in town from a different conference. It pro effectively rules out us going to play the teams in our conference that are down in Pennsylvania. in all likelihood. Now, things could potentially change, but that's the way it's kind of shaping up for the women. The men, they've said from the beginning, because the spring sports obviously had that disruption last year, they really, really, really want to make sure that the spring sports get a season in this year. And they gave us a revised schedule a couple weeks back, which would have conference play start on March 13th. Normally, that doesn't happen. Normally, we start conference right around more like February 20th. So you're talking close to a month pushback. And they've revised the structure of the league, which normally involves a double round robin, but played featuring quads. So on the weekends, four teams would come together and you'd play two matches. And then you'd have single matches during the week. So this time around, though, it's only going to be a single round because they've said they don't want more than two teams in the same facility. So the quads are not doable. And then top four teams would play in the semifinals of the conference, which would not be single site. It'd be, you know, hosted by the higher seed, and same with the championship match. The one thing that came up during the Division III meeting the other day was, if I remember correctly or understood correctly, it was saying something about a requirement of 11 matches to qualify for the NCAA tournament. By my math, our teams wouldn't get to 11 if we're only playing conference. Now, the conference has said teams will be allowed to have non-conference competition mixed in so long as in those matches all our conference protocols are met, which shouldn't be that hard because they're mostly based on NCAA. There might be some minor adjustments for New York State or Pennsylvania State in the case of those teams. So if you're just doing like a crosstown thing or an in-state, you're probably on the same protocol, so that shouldn't be that hard to deal with. Of course, you know, lots of time between now and when that will come to pass. So things could change between now and then. Obviously, testing is an element of it. How quickly the vaccines get out there, you know, you don't expect young people to be anywhere near the top of that list. So I'm not thinking, the kids will be getting those before season. But who knows? The other aspect to that is normally the guys are back before the start of second term to have a bit of a preseason before everything goes, but that's not going to happen. They'll come back with the rest of the students. We've got one guy who's out of state, so he'll have to probably come back a little bit early to accommodate whatever testing and quarantine that will be required to come into the dorms and whatnot, but it's not going to be like it was coming in for first semester, because that stuff has changed a fair bit, which is good because they had to come in 2 weeks early in August. And that's just, I'm sure they were not liking that whole situation, and I can't blame them at all because I had to go through two quarantines. Once when I first got to Buffalo, having come from too far away and out of their comfort area in terms of the COVID situation. And then right at the beginning of term, when I had close contact with somebody who tested positive shortly thereafter. So yeah, I've been through it. It's not a lot of fun. But anyway, that's what we're dealing with. And we just kind of get along. And I'm really pleased all around with how the players have handled the whole situation. It was not an easy semester to try to work with. I mean, the uncertainty was there through the whole thing. I mean, we didn't have any certainty until basically the week before Thanksgiving. And that was the certainty that we were done, that there was not going to be any more volleyball or anything like that at that point. But from the beginning, you know, we obviously got the news about the season getting pushed to spring. And initially, we were going to have a September 16th kind of initial phased-in start to being able to do athletic activities. But we had a spike on campus. As it turns out, there was the president of the college sent an email around not too long ago saying there were no instances of transmission in a classroom setting. So any cases that we got, and I think it was something like 20 in September. It was all due to not to off-campus things. And you can probably guess what sort of off-campus stuff was involved at that stage, because it was happening all over the country with basically every college out there. And 20 doesn't sound like all that many, and it isn't. I mean, Medi's a small school with about, I think, 1,400, 1,500 total students. So 20 out of that is very small. But when you consider you now have to not just isolate those students, but anybody that was in close contact with them had to go into quarantine as well. That's potentially a lot of people and a lot of disruption. After September, things quieted down considerably. I think in October, we only had two, you know, in the campus community. So it between people acting responsibly and the protocols and the precautionary stuff that the school did, it ended up working out pretty well. And there weren't a lot of disruptions on that level. It's not to say it wasn't, you know, a perfect semester. Obviously, you're talking a mixture of in-classroom and online type learning, and some of that's better than others, but, you know, everybody seemed to get through it without too much issue or complaint. We eventually were able to get in to start athletic activities in October, and they did it on a basis of first the low-risk sports, which was, I think, bowling was on that list, cross-country maybe, I think perhaps one other. I'm forgetting exactly how they went. So the way we were able to do it was you did a 1 week period where you were allowed 2 to 3 workouts sessions. So either out on the fields, or if the weather didn't permit, we could do it inside in our off campus weight room, because all of this stuff had to take place away from our main campus facilities. We have got a satellite athletic facility where the fields, not yet baseball, softball, but the other outdoor sports do their business for training and games. And there's a building there with classrooms and locker rooms and a really nice weight room. It's all, I think, less than 2 years old, I believe. So it's all new and nice and all that. So those sports came in. Everything went okay for them. There was obviously a testing requirement before anybody could get started. Then when they got rolling, they phased in the intermediate group, which is still not us because we're classified in the high-risk group, along with basketball, and I'm forgetting who the other one was. Maybe lacrosse, I think, was the other. So you were able to do that week of workout that was kind of your, hey, let's get the bodies back doing some activities. And I worked with our swim coaches, our certified strength coach. So we worked together on doing a program for the teams. And then after that, you could do up to 3 times a week, 1 hour per session, no more than 10 people altogether. So because of the timing of it, by that point, you're talking early to mid-November. So we were never going to have more than 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks in the gym. So think the 2 full weeks before Thanksgiving, plus Monday, Tuesday of Thanksgiving week before campus shutdown. So the women got in a total of 5 sessions, and the guys unfortunately only got 4 because the ramped up numbers of COVID in our county caused us to go from yellow status to orange status, like Wednesday of the week prior to Thanksgiving. And that shut everything down. All athletic activities were done. So the women had done 3 sessions the week before and had gotten 2 sessions in that week. And the men had gotten their 3 the week before, but we're only able to get 1 in the week before we had shut down. The guys, unfortunately, only had 4 or 5 ever in practice. Because others just didn't work. They hadn't gotten cleared in time to get in there. And there was also job conflicts and stuff like that that we were trying to work around. So we never had the full group. The women did, for the last three sessions, have their full group, which is good. And hearing them walking out of the gym after that final session, they were talking about how much progress that they had even seen just in that small amount of time. Because for the most part, they had never played together. I mean, only three of them are returners from last year's team. Nobody else had played college volleyball ever, period. So, and they did. And they definitely did make progress. Now, it's a long way from what they would look like if they had been, given a full season or anything like that. But hey, it was a start and they were appreciative of it. And I think even the guys were somewhat appreciative of it, if a little frustrated that they never had as much of an opportunity. But I think it gave them some motivation to really get out of the spring when that opportunity comes along. So I'm looking forward to that, whatever that might be. In the meantime, recruiting, recruiting, recruiting. I'm supposed to bring in seven players each for the men and the women. As a function of how small the squads are right now, they want me to carry 15, which I think most co college coaches out there would say is a quite reasonable number. I've been in places where it was closer to 20, so I'll take it. So seven gets us at least close to that number with both squads. The women have no upperclassmen right now. So unless we get some transfers, we're going to be super, super young. That's just the way it's going to be. And that's fine. Just, you just look at it from a building perspective. The guys' situation is a bit more mixed. We've got one super, for sure, one super senior in the squad who's going to have still more eligibility. So he could be a sixth-year player, playing because he's doing his master's degree. So he'll still be here anyway. We've got two guys who are academic seniors this year, a junior. And then I think it's three academic sophomores. I don't know what the seniors are going to do. I haven't spoken to them yet about their plans, whether they want to stick around. It's a tougher thing for the guys because it's one thing if you're on the women's side, you just got to linger for a semester. But you're talking about a whole extra year, which is a pain. So we'll see what happens with that. We've got the women's have two commitments that came in this past week, which is great. One was anticipated. She was part of the early action application group. And she had told me before that she was almost certainly going to commit to Medi. So when she did, that was as expected. The other one is somebody that we thought was probably coming our way, but we didn't know. The timing was a little bit surprising. It was earlier than we thought was going to happen. We haven't posted the announcements yet. The one of them still needs to do a deposit, so we can't actually officially say anything about her yet. But one is a center from Canada, who's I would have recruited her in any of my prior stops, Division One, Division Two. She's really solid, so she's going to be a good addition for sure. The other one is a hitter who can hit basically anywhere along the net, although it sounds like she'll be playing middle for her club team this year, and. So it leaves us, five more to find on the women's side. For sure, another center. Depending on how the rest of that balances out, we need at least one more middle and a couple more pins, or two middles and two pins, to get up to seven. The idea going in was two setters, two middles, three pin hitters. That gets you seven. Don't need any libros. DS has got way too many of those as it is anyway. So I like the way we're starting. We've got some other kids that are further along in the process and we've had good conversations with. So we'll hopefully start getting some additional commitments shortly into the new year. Fill that class out. The guys, men's recruiting always has a slower process to it than the women's does. So no commitments at this point. Which is disappointing, but not entirely unexpected. So, it'll be probably a busier spring for them in terms of the 21s, whereas with the women, hopefully before too much longer, we'll be looking at 22s. So I think that's about it for Madai and for everything. Personally for me, normally this time of year is one because it's quiet and there's not a lot going on. I like to get a bunch of stuff done. And boy, do I have a long list of things that I want to get done. Some of it I've already talked about. So we'll see how productive I can keep myself through these holidays and into the beginning of the new year. But you'll all see the results of whatever of it is coaching related, I'm sure. In the meanwhile, this will be going out to my patrons. Thank you all very much for all the support this year through the coaching conversations and through the blog, or I should say through the podcast. This is going out pre-Christmas for them. So any of my patrons who celebrate Christmas or just generally enjoy the period, hopefully you have a good Christmas this year. For everybody else, Christmas has already passed, and all the rest of the December holidays. So hopefully you had a good holiday season there. And we're getting ready for New Year, so Happy New Year coming up. I will see you on the flip side of things with the next podcast. Ciao.
Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes on the website, coachingvb.com, for links to further information about this episode. You'll also be able to find the complete back catalog of prior coaching conversation. While you're there, you can sign up for my mailing list. Members find out in advance what conversations I'll be doing next and can submit questions if they like. If you'd like to support this podcast, go to patreon.com/coachingvb. Patrons get early access to every episode, as well as other special benefits along the way. I'm always interested in hearing what you think about coaching conversations and ideas you might have of topics and/or guests for future episodes. You can send them to me at john@coachingvb.com, tweet them to @coachingvb, or hit me up on my Facebook page, Coaching Volleyball. All the best until next time.